Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a Kezsource family production. This podcast exists in large part because of KezCM, the content marketing business inside Kezsource Inc. So what does KezCM do? You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? Well, that's what we do. Content creation and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at KezCM, we exist to help business leaders build a meaningful legacy that is worth living and leaving. Learn more by visiting KezCM.com. In this episode, we discuss the life insurance industry, the future of your business, and key people. Our guest today is Mitch Long, an insurance advisor with Kezsource Insurance Group. With Mitch's experience and knowledge of the insurance industry, his understanding of planning strategies, and his ability to help advisors and consumers navigate the process of acquiring life insurance, we just had to bring Mitch back to the podcast to discuss all this and much more. And with so much to talk about, let's get right into this episode and welcome Mitch Long. So Mitch, as a business owner, I look around and you come to a realization pretty quickly that there's certain people in your organization that if they weren't at work tomorrow, we'd have a problem on our hands. And when we talk to other business owners, we get the same sense from them. And sometimes they have a hard time identifying who they are. But when you go through the process of who they might be, they start to see it. And you can start to get a little bit worried about, ooh, what would happen if that person wasn't here? They know the ins and outs of my business. They've been here for 15 years or they've been here for 2 years, and they're just an important part of that organization. What are you seeing with trends in key people, first of all, more than anything else inside of businesses as business owners are trying to stay above the business, and allowing the key people in the company to succeed and to have stake in the company? What do you see as the different trends as it relates to just key people in business in general?
Well, just, the first thing, like you said, is to get the company to, to try to think about and identify who those people are. And a lot of times the smaller businesses, you've got that one person who might be, 80% of the sales or might have the relationships with the customers or, in certain situations, like the place where my wife works, there are people that actually have patents and they own patents. So what happens if that person walks out the door or dies or becomes disabled? And so, the first thing is to think about what happens to your business if that person were not here for whatever reason. So there's lots of things you can do to, number one, incent that person to stay. And so there's lots of things where you can keep them in the business, create some golden handcuffs that keep them around. And then also there's things you can do to plan for what happens if this person dies. And then also, most importantly, if they became disabled, and that's a piece that a lot of people don't think about, is what if they don't die? What if they can't work because of a disability? And yet to the business, it's as if they're not here. And then what's our plan? And yeah, the key thing is just to have a plan for that event.
When you brought up people at your wife's office, they have a patent. And I've seen it before. We've worked with clients and someone built the software. And when they built the software, they were the key user of that software. They knew all the ins and outs of that software. And without that person involved, the business really wouldn't exist anymore, at least for the next couple of years. And they had to ensure there's actually more than a couple of years, but there's a short-term need. Sometimes it was more of like the liability, the protection on what's up if something happened. But then you brought up something else about golden handcuffs. And, I think a lot of times people hear that phrase and they understand it to a certain extent of what that means. But, just from a basic level, golden handcuffs is, you're trying to reward someone for staying. But what's been your experience in working in just the golden handcuff approach?
Well, I think it's a great way to do it. And I think that, creating an incentive where you're putting money aside for that person down the road doesn't always have to be with insurance, but there are some advantages to using, cash value life insurance to do that, where you're saying, hey, if you stay, then we're putting money into this policy. It's accumulating cash value. And this policy is going to be yours if you stay for, whatever the time is, 7 years, 10 years, 15 years. And so it's a great incentive to show the employee that you're invested in them being there and that you're recognizing their value to the company.
Yeah, so okay, so we're talking about golden handcuffs, and then go to the other side, we'll go back a little bit. When we look at someone, say, if we were to lose that person, we'd want to receive $1 million, let's say, to help the recruiting, the managing, the retaining of that next person, right? How
Right.
does the employee, so the person that you're looking at, how does that employee receive that information that you want to protect? And this is not a golden handcuff approach. So say we're just looking
Right.
at, for insurance purposes, we're looking at term insurance. Because a lot of times for key person insurance, they're going to look at let's just say it's a $1 million 10-year term policy, meaning they get $1 million if something happens, that person dies within the 10 years of the policy, as long as the premiums have been paid and they've, met their end of the bargain, the insurance company would pay that $1 million, right? How does the employee often respond in your experience to that conversation? Because they now have to go get underwritten for that insurance.
Most times it's not a problem. In fact, I've got several, in underwriting right now, and it really is where the owner says you're valuable to the company, and I want to insure you. Now there are times now we have to actually get documentation that says they understand that this benefit is going to go to the company and not their beneficiary, but they recognize that what they mean to the company, and quite often they're flattered by it, that they understand that I'm a key component here. It's also a great time to talk to that person about their own insurance and to say, hey, this is going to the company, but if you need, to change your insurance or increase your insurance, this is a great time for you to do it because you've already gone through all the underwriting required to get it done.
That's right. Yeah, no, I think that makes that's the thing that makes a lot of sense, is that you're having that open and honest conversation internally at a business. And hopefully at that point, if someone is a key person at the company, they recognize that. They recognize their importance, and everyone's being very upfront and honest about it. So now it kind of, goes up the ladder, let's say, to the owners of the business. And there's so many different levels of ownership and variations of ownership, whether you're a C Corp or an S Corp or an LLC. And if there's, is it a one person corporation, one owner, two, three, many owners? And so there's many different layers to unravel there. We're not going to try to solve them all. I think, the purposes of, let's say, small businesses, a lot of times you run across LLCs and S corporations. When it comes to that, and it comes to the business owners, obviously they're usually key people in the business. Sometimes you'll get silent owners, but they're key person nonetheless, in the sense that they're providing a lot of the funding for that business. Buy-sell agreements obviously is a word that's talked about quite a bit. What have you seen recently when it comes to buy-sell agreements? Because one of the things that we see, just we all together, meaning, is that there's a lot of great businesses out there. There's a lot of great businesses with ideas, execution, great products, great services. But then we find out that the protection, the things that they're looking to just make sure are stable, aren't necessarily in place. If they are in place, they're dated, or they're not done
Right.
perhaps correctly. What have you been seeing out there when talking to small business owners when it comes to buy-sell agreements?
Yeah, I mean, I think they really, number one, the number one thing to ask is there a plan? And, is there a written plan? Because a lot of times, these small business owners are really good at what they do, and they're busy doing their job and making money. But at the same time, they have some issues there. And so, if I'm in partnership with another person, what happens again if one of us dies, one of us becomes disabled? What's our plan? And so sometimes they had a plan when they originally, incorporated. But when's the last time? The second question is when is the last time that plan was reviewed? And is it up to date? And so you see a lot of things. I mean, number one, you'll say, yes, we have a plan. And our business is worth $2 million, and so I'm gonna buy him out for $1 million, and she's gonna buy me out for $1 million. Well, the next question is, where's the money coming from? And so you get a lot of interesting answers. I don't know. Out of the business, we're gonna go borrow it. A lot of times they haven't thought about if you just lost an owner, your business is under stress. And so the question is, are you gonna want to go put the business under further stress by funds or taking capital out of the corporation? And so that's something they haven't thought about. The one issue I ran into with a group is they had a buy-sell agreement, and they actually had it funded with life insurance. And so I asked them, do you have a buy-sell agreement? Yes, we do. Is it funded with life insurance? Yes, it is. So you almost would say, well, you got a great plan. Well, then the third thing I asked them was, when's the last time you looked at it? 15 years ago. Well, I asked them if I could just review it. And so I reviewed it. And the two things that I found is, number one, four of the owners were not part of that original agreement. So they were excluded. So there was no plan. The second thing was they had it funded with life insurance, but they had it funded at $8 a share when the business was worth 50. And so it was going to be an inadequate plan if something really did happen. And so, you know, we were able to update that plan. So we encourage people, particularly if it's a fast growing business, that every 3 to 5 years, you need to look at it and make sure that it's correct. Another issue that we find is, you know, the plan has, you know, two owners. Well, we're going to take out a policy and pay for a policy that benefits the spouse directly, who's not in the business. Well, that's an improper plan, because what does that do towards obligating those shares to be transferred to the other owner? The answer is nothing. I mean, if the wife gets the benefit, she's still in business with you unless she gives you the shares. So it needs to be structured properly so that what you want to have happen happens.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, because when you were talking about the buy sell agreements and having those conversations with business owners to where they're thinking about an insurance salesman, let's say, coming in there and having this conversation, the automatic assumption, and a lot of times it's the correct assumption, and that's a lot of the reasons we're having this conversation today, is that I'm going to find a need, right? If I'm an insurance salesman, I make money if I sell you life insurance. So I'm going to find a need and I'm going to sell you life insurance. But what needs to be understood is, while that is in part often true, because we see it in the insurance industry, just like in any industry, there's a lot of people out there trying to make a quick dollar, that the people that have been in the business for a long time and that continue to stay relevant and continue to want to be in the business and create a brand for themselves for many years, is they're going to go about it the right way. Because there's an abundance of small businesses and people out there that can buy life insurance. People buy life insurance in good times and in bad times. So it's, you know, I believe in many ways insurance can be recession proof if done correctly. Certain things change with it. But I think it's important, because what you're saying is you're having a conversation with a business owner and we're reviewing your buy-sell agreement. I've seen you, Mitch, in action and saying, you've seen business, and I've done the same thing. We've seen businesses and their buy-sell agreement or their insurance needs are covered. They are good. There is nothing to do there at that time. So what you do is you just give them that information and move on. But I just want, from your vantage point, that I think a lot of insurance plans are implemented incorrectly is because there was a rush to put something in force when maybe there wasn't a need, or was a rush to put something in force just to get it done and move on to the next one. Have you seen this type of stuff going on? Do you see that there's a reception a lot of times to insurance agents because there's a negative perception out there because you're showing up there and the first thing on your mind is, I have to make a sale?
Well, and I think that, you know, that what we ought to do, you know, I had an agent I work with, what he said was, you know, what you have to do with a customer or a client is show them what they need, even if they don't want to hear it. It's our job to show them what they need and the ways they can do it. So if you have a buy-sell agreement with your partner and you don't want to fund it with life insurance, that's fine. I mean, our goal is to say, you know, this is something you should think about. And, you know, you can say, I don't want to do it that way. And there's other ways to do it. I mean, there's other ways to fund your buy-sell agreement besides insurance. But we know that insurance can be an affordable way to do it. The other thing is it can be a combination of the two, where, and I see this happen a lot, where there's a lump sum paid out if somebody dies of half the value, and then the other half of the value is paid out of future earnings of the business. So it doesn't have to be one way or another. It can be the combination of the two, as long as everybody understands. And that's what's so very important, is if everybody understands what happens at time of death, because sometimes your spouse may think the business is worth more because you were bragging to her that the business is worth $3 million when it's really only worth $2 million. Well, guess what? She's going to be looking for that $1.5 million coming to her. And if you have an agreement that says agreed on, that's going to make sure that things transition smoothly. So it's really important just to have that agreement. That's the first thing we're trying to do. Number two is to understand what the value of the business is. And that's another thing. A lot of business owners, you say, what is the value? Not sure. I got an idea. You know, sometimes they're what you say, what would you sell it for, is not what the value is. And in fact, I just did a valuation for a business owner. And when I did the valuation, he said, well, I offered my partner three times the amount of what his business was over 2 years ago, and he turned it down. So that was a pretty revealing thing to him, was I overbid, and he obviously thinks it's worth more than it is. And so, you know, those type tools that we have that we can help them understand, you know, why you need an agreement, what the risks are, and then, you know, what the value of business. You mentioned recession proof. I like that comment because, you know, what happens if you're trying, if a person dies in a down economy, you know, sometimes the business is not worth what you think it is when the economy is bad. And so having that agreement funded with insurance kind of recession proofs your buy sell, because it says, I'm going to get the value of my business because I have a willing buyer with an agreement to buy the business for what we think it's worth. So that's a nice thing to have happen in a down economy.
Yeah, and it's those questions a lot of times when you get to what is the business worth? You know, it's misunderstood because they're not sure. They haven't done it before, and there's so many different variations of a valuation. You know, you could do a free look and get an idea. Then you could do limited scope, and you do a full scope business valuations. All that can be done within our group. And like you said, it's an important component of it for so many different reasons. Is you're trying to get loans from your bank, you're trying to sell your business, you're trying to get insurance for your business. And once you show one of those valuations, it's a better way for you to understand your business, and it's much easier for you to go out there and get these different things like we talked about before. I mean, these business owners have incredible ideas, incredible businesses, but you know, what is behind that business? What are all the little things? Because when you dive into books of businesses, a lot of times, which we've done, you start to find certain things that are repetitive in a lot of different companies, and things aren't done right. You know, going back to the buy-sell agreement, I've seen buy-sell agreements improperly set up, like you were talking about, to where they would be fully taxable because they didn't do it right. And you know, or we've seen it to where there was a death and there was an attorney involved, and this is not one of our cases. This is kind of like going there later on and talking to the attorney about it, to where that insurance policy paid a claim, but the buy-sell agreement was never signed. It was done, but it was they forgot to sign the agreement, and so the money was not going to the partner, and the wife would not give up on it. She's like, nope, it's my money now, because she was the one that had the estate. And it's little things like that. And again, someone just missed it. Obviously, multiple people missed it, but I don't know who was involved, and no one's placing blame per se, but that's a problem. And that became a lawsuit, and the lawsuit took a lot of other people's money. So it's just kind of looking at those little things. It's no different than looking at your liability, your E&O insurance, you know, the different things, the things you don't want to pay for. What if someone slips and falls and they come to your office? Do you have a, you know, business overhead protection, a BOP policy? I don't know. You know, so those are all the different things that business owners have to look at. It, I would say, you know, as one myself, it's not the fun stuff that I look forward to, but it is the thing. It's kind of interesting that it's fun in the sense that you're doing something, you're running a business, and this is all comes with it. You'd rather not do it, but what an opportunity it is to do those things and then to help other business owners do those same things for their business, so we can look at them and say, hey, we want to help build and grow. We want to help build and protect your business. And if we can do these things, I think we are doing that. And all these different aspects you're talking about, whether it's key person by sell, you know, just being the person there for them and consulting with them. And yeah, if there's a sale on the other end of it, we'd love to be a part of that. And that's what you're saying. But looking at it from an aspect of, you know, there's a big change in insurance, you know, where insurance carriers are going direct to consumer, where you either go online or all these things, they're cutting out middle people, and understandably so, because there's a lot of expenses involved with doing it. We've seen rapid accelerating, you know, algorithmic underwriting, where you can apply online, you don't have to go through any exams. That's changing the marketplace. That's great. What value, and this is different, so when I say what value does the agent bring to the table, not every agent brings the same value. So that's the first and foremost. So assuming we're talking about someone like yourself, and you know, don't let your head get too big, but assuming we're talking about someone like you, Mitch, who is a good agent, that's got a reputation, that's been there, that's done that, that clients just love talking to and helping through the process. So I'm kind of giving away the answers, but at the same time, what value does a good insurance agent bring to the table as opposed to that one person that says, "Hey, I just need $1 million of 10-year term insurance on this key employee"? What value does that good insurance agent bring to the
Right.
table?
Well, first of all, you know, when you're calling an 800 number or direct line or whatever it is, you know, that you know, you're it's cookie cutter, and so it's sort of one size fits all. And so what I have found is, number one, there's not as many agents out here in the marketplace anymore, and I think there's a real vacuum for knowledge for somebody that really knows how to navigate the insurance world, whether it's life insurance or disability or long-term care. And so there's a real vacuum out here. I think that our group's in a good position because we are, you know, we do have that knowledge. But people, first of all, it's understanding. And so I run into a lot of people who say, "I went online and got this," or "I went online and got this quote." But the question is it really what you need? And is that person really talking about your needs? What's your need? You know, we hear people say, "Oh, buy term, that's all you need." Well, I don't agree with that. And so it's really understanding, because if you're buying term insurance, you're buying a product where there's a 98% chance that you or your family will never receive a death benefit from that plan. So yeah, I can go out and buy a $2 million life policy for a 20-year term, but at 54 years old, statistically, I'm going to be alive at 98 in 20 years at 98% of the time. And so then what happens? I don't have anything to leave to my family. So a lot of times it's understanding the products. And you know, I use the analogy of, if you were going out to buy a car and you were going to buy a Ford Taurus or you're going to buy a Mercedes-Benz, you know, which one's more expensive? Well, it's more expensive than Mercedes, and that's because it's going to last longer, it's got better resale value and so forth, more quality. Well, that's really the argument with life insurance. Is permanent life insurance is more expensive because it is going to pay. So if you want a guarantee that a death benefit is going to pay, you buy permanent life. And so my thing I always say to clients is, don't have a temporary solution to a permanent problem. If you need to leave something for your family, term insurance is probably not going to get it done unless you die early. I just had a client. I like to tell this story. It's a touching story to me. A gentleman called me that I'd sold insurance to about 15 years ago. He has terminal cancer at age 56. He called me and said, "I want you to call the company. I want to make sure that this is in force and that my wife's the beneficiary, because I won't be here in 2 months." So that's kind of where things hit home. I called, the company said, "Yes, everything's in force. She's the beneficiary." When he passed away, she called me. I said, "Do you want my help on the claim?" And she said, "No, I'll just call the company directly." Well, after 3 weeks, she called me back and said, "Well, maybe I do need your help, because they're giving me the runaround at the company." Well, I had connections at that company. I called the back office people. I said, "Please, please, this lady's, you know, is waiting on her death claim. Her husband just passed away from cancer." Within a day, we had a FedEx number for her money going out to her. And the next day she texted me and said, I got my money." Without me, she'd still be dealing directly with the company and getting the runaround. So I think that, you know, again, like you said, not pat myself on the back, but that's the role that an agent has, not just at the point of sale, but when the time comes when you are filing the claim. These companies are not easy to deal with, and you have to have somebody that knows how to navigate that process.
No, that's 100% right. I mean, this business is all about stories. So, I mean, I think it's important you share that story. And anyone that knows you, you're not the guy that pats yourself on the back. I mean, you're a Steelers fan after all, right? So,
That's it.
you know, so, but it is important to share those stories and to have these conversations, because you're right. I mean, we've all dealt with it, and you kind of just know different conversations to have and different buttons to push to get things done. Because at the end of the day, we always say it, you know, these insurance companies are in business to protect people, and we hold them accountable to that, but we also have great relationships with them. You know, so like you just said, like you're able to call someone up and hey, remind them this is why they're in business, and let's have a conversation. Let's do the right thing by the client and for the people that, you know, trusted you to do this. Let's get this thing done. There's no more wasting time. Let's
That's it.
Make
And,
it
you know, that
happen.
gentleman that called me, yeah, and that gentleman that called me to make sure his wife was going to get the benefit of the policy, you know, he didn't want to hear me say, I'm going to give her the 800 number and let her call directly. He wanted to hear me say, I'm going to take care of her and don't you worry about that. And that's where the agent has a role with their customer, and that's something you're not going to get calling direct.
No, that's it. I mean, that's, you used the word powerful before, and that's what that is. And it's you remembering what that is. And again, this is not every agent, and I'm not, you know, yes, I am. I am calling out bad agents. I'm calling out bad companies. I'm calling out the bad, you know, bad things that go on behind the scenes of this stuff. We've had enough of it. I think we've been through this for, you know, we've been in this business for a long time, and you know, it's very easy to be there at time of sale. It's a completely different time. It's completely different to be there when it's actually needed. The claim's ready right to go. This is when everyone needs to step up. And that's interesting to me, that's when it's crickets for so many. Oh, my agent's no longer in business. Of course not, because he's probably selling, or she's selling real estate now, or moved on, and nothing against real estate, just moved on to a different business. And, you know, it's just an example, right? It's just an extreme example, but the industry's changed so much. And, you know, another frustrating part is, you know, we work with many people in the industry, life insurance, financial advisors, wealth advisors, property and casualty agencies, benefit agencies. And a couple things. One is, we used to, even being in an insurance business, we used to get calls constantly to buy life insurance. I can't tell you the last time I got a call to buy life insurance, right? So, and the same thing is when we talk to people in the business, maybe not exactly insurance people, but people who can sell insurance and used to sell a lot of insurance, and even insurance agents, they're financial advisors now. They're not selling life insurance. You know what? I really don't have time for that. I have to watch the market. So I don't have time for this because I'm doing my benefits. Or I don't have time for this because of whatever other reasons I'm doing. So let me get this straight. You don't have time to talk to your clients about life insurance. So then I'm wondering, who does do it now? Who is the person? Right. Are you seeing the same trend? I mean, I know you are, but I'm just curious, like, what your take is around it. There's a lot of people out there, and they're not necessarily afraid to do it. They're just so busy doing other things that I think the consumer, the person, the business owner, the person that needs to acquire insurance, that probably isn't picking up the phone, let's be honest, to buy life insurance, and who's to blame them? They're not having the conversations with the right people anymore. Do you agree with that?
Well, and that's it. And I think that you know, I work with a lot of commercial property and casualty agents who are going into businesses, and they're talking about business liability, and they're talking about, you know, cyber liability, and they're talking about, you know, how to replace your equipment if something goes wrong. And then they don't talk about the insurance, life insurance piece of it. They don't talk about the buy sale. They don't talk about the key man. And I, you know, my thinking is, you know, if you're a risk advisor, how can you go in and say, well, I'm going to talk about this side of the fence, but I'm not going to talk about that side of the fence? And what happens, and what, to me, almost a fiduciary responsibility is, you didn't tell these people that they could have had a buy sell agreement that would have provided funds to buy out a deceased owner's shares of the business. How do you call yourself a risk manager? I think you have some liability there, and I think it's really important. And so that's where our group can come in, and you know, we talk a lot to these guys, and they bring us in because we have that expertise, and we're showing them how they can handle that other side of the house without having to have that in-depth knowledge. So we become that knowledge base for them, and all they've got to do is bring it up to their customer and let us help them.
That's it. And yeah, and it's that, and just in general, business owners, people in general, like, they can have conversations. Someone like yourself or you know, other people in our group, they're available to have conversations. And as other things are needed, if they need benefits, if they need property and casualty, if they need, you know, personal, you know, E&O insurance, for example, there's all sorts of different lines of wealth management. I mean, we have access to these different people, and we like to bring them in. We like to bring the best of the market to the consumer, because that's what they deserve, and that's what they want. That's what we would want. So if you were going out and you needed certain things, you would want the best of the people brought to you. And that's what we want to provide. And it's not our sales pitch, it's just the way it is, right? And real quick, I want to move on to the last thing I want to talk about is just costs and trends in the cost trends in the industry of insurance. I mean, people are living longer. Insurance companies have been stressed out by a low interest rate environment for many years. You know, but at the same time, I do believe that the costs are an advantage it's not cheap, of course, but it's an advantage to the consumer. What have you seen, you know, being in this industry for many years? I won't date you right now, but being in the industry for many years, what have you seen with the cost trends in life insurance?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because in the 90s, you know, costs were going down, you know, when President Clinton was president, and the companies were getting great rates of return on their money. And so the cost of insurance kept down, going down, down, down. And then kind of in the early 2000s, and in, you know, 2008 was sort of a watershed year, that big negative we had there. You know, the cost started going back up, and the company's ability to invest money and get good returns in the low interest rate environment. So we have seen the cost trending up, particularly on, for example, the long-term care insurance, not just for investment reasons, but also for, like you said, how long people are living and how much they're needing that care. But the market has responded to that because, you know, now the traditional long-term care is sort of going away. And we're seeing the life insurance being used as the vehicle to provide long-term care benefit. And a lot of people still aren't aware that they can, you know, have that long-term care rider on their life insurance policy. So it, you know, people always used to joke around to say, well, if I buy a life insurance, I've got to die to get a benefit. Well, with the new products, you don't. You can actually say, I can use this if I have a long-term care need, if I have a critical illness, a chronic illness, or a terminal illness, I can get access to my death benefit to help me in my time of need and not just a death benefit.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a big change in the industry. I mean, we were getting started with that, and, you know, just where it's come today in the marketplace is fascinating. And I think there's a lot more change coming to the insurance industry. We've seen a lot of consolidation. You know, people see it with the banks. You know, insurance companies are having the same thing. I think the different players underneath the insurance companies or a part of the insurance companies are doing a lot of consolidation, a lot of changes happening. Products are changing, low interest rate environment like we talked about. But like we said, people are living longer. The process of acquiring a life insurance is, I don't know how to say this, it's getting easier and harder. Easier in the sense that there's options to get it without having to go through this long process, but harder in the sense that insurance carriers are more focused on creating new processes and not necessarily focused on improving the customer experience. But again, that's where an agent or you or us can come into play to try to make it as easy as possible. It's never been the easiest process, which is another reason why the insurance industry has a bad rap. For good reason. And that's what we try to improve upon it and tell stories and give examples of when they relate to the person that we're talking to. So is there anything else that you want to add about what you see in the insurance industry and or just anything in general?
No, I think that, you know, I think we're in a good position to help, particularly in the business owner environment. And I think that is something that is lacking. Like I said, there is a vacuum there for where to go to get help on those things. Helping clients understand what their business is worth. You know, we mentioned briefly, we have a informal valuation that we can do for businesses. It's not a actuarially certified that you can take it into court, but it is a good snapshot of kind of where we are, which business owners really like. It kind of helps them understand where they are and what the value is. And then that becomes the kind of baseline for why we funded our business, our buy-sell agreement the way we did. And, you know, the other thing that we talk about, too, is the disability. And again, I always emphasize, you know, what happens if you have a business partner that becomes disabled but doesn't die? In a lot of ways, that's just as bad. And how do we deal with that? And so, again, the last thing I'd leave you with thought-wise is just business owners need to take the time to think about and let us help them on how where their business is and how we can help them make sure it continues.
Yeah, that's well said. Well, on that note, I think we'll end it. We'll come back more with some more thoughts around the life insurance. Like you said, disability, long-term care insurance, and just the evolving industry that's in and around it. But I appreciate your time, Mitch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mitch, it has been absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. From the ideas you gave business owners on how to protect their business to your stories on what you have seen as an insurance advisor, we are all better off from the time we spent with you. The perspectives from Mitch on insurance and business planning are now perspectives you, the business leader, can use for yourself. And for that, Mitch, thank you. And for anyone looking to talk to Mitch about insurance planning for your business, I would encourage you to reach out to him. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or contact me on Twitter and Instagram at Eric_Kaz. Thank you for listening to our CazSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. Until next time, we're out of here. When all is, wait my car. This podcast exists in large part because of CASCM, the content marketing business inside CASSource, Inc. CASCM is excited to bring the content marketing services used at CASSource to you. Learn more by visiting CASCM.com.